This is the MLWRadio.com Network.
Welcome to a new episode of the Eastern Lariat Podcast, your show for news, notes, reviews, and opinions on the world of Japanese pro wrestling here on the MLW Radio Network. We're back with three G1 shows to look back at, actually. Well, basically two and a half, because the first one happened last Wednesday, and it was not a very interesting show, to say the least. Not very, really not worth your time watching, but I, of course, did. I watched all the G1 matches, much like my friend here on the other side of the big Atlantic Ocean, the real All-Atlantic champion, Dylan Fox.
Strigga, I'm feeling in championship mode right now.
Oh.
We have G1 all over the place right now. Every single match, you watched them, I watched them. I bet some of the listeners watched them. Some of them probably watched some of these matches and they said, oh, wait a minute, so-and-so's in this match? I'm not going to waste my time on that. I'll listen to Dylan and Strigga talk about it on Eastern Lariat, which
fantastic.
Is what this that's what this show, I always say, that's what the Patreon, patreon.com/Eastern Lariat, with every single match, also Tokyo Joshi Pro stuff as well, going in there, and Dragon Gate when that comes up later. But I always say, take your time and use it how you want to use it. And then listen to us. And you know, if you're really clever, you can steal our opinions and use them as your own, and it's going to make you look super smart, and it's going to be like, man, I didn't have to watch that random match with this guy that I don't really even like that much. Instead, I listened to him, they told me what was up, and now I feel like I know what happened. I feel like I'm so much smarter in wrestling for knowing what happened in Yujiro and David Finlay's match, and that's what's going to, that's what the world needs, I think, at all this time.
So, getting right to it, huh? Yujiro and David Finlay.
That was the worst match I thought of. But it also was the first one as well. It just so happened to work out that.
So this was in CBO Arena Sendai last Wednesday, July 20th, 1,919 fans. Yeah, it started off with Yujiro coming to the ring with Peter, defeating David Finlay with assistance from Sho. So they told us right away in the first match of this block what we can expect from Yujiro matches, and it continued with El Fantasmo, which was weird because there still is this Bullet Club dynamic going on, and they haven't really made clear how the House of Torture and the Bullet Club, like, what their relationship is now. Do they coexist? Is there a friendship going on, or do they just ignore one another as long as they don't share rings? So that's not really clear. But to this match, yeah, it showed you that the shenanigans will be in place for all of Yujiro's matches. And for David Finlay, unfortunately, it started out with a very lackluster match that actually, like, I had hopes for Finlay to make this match work, but as soon as the interferences came, it was all gone for me. So how did you feel about that?
You know, I said it before, Yujiro is going to get a lot of, you know, negative comments in this tournament. And I think that's for some reason, but I have to say, I don't think he's a terrible wrestler. I think they were actually having a pretty decent match, actually. It was getting to where I hoped it would be, and then the show stuff happened. And I think that really overwhelmed the entirety of the match. And I mean, getting to where I hoped it would be is like, you know, solid match. It wasn't like, oh my god, this is overachieving and it's this amazing match. It was like, okay, this is watchable. This is pretty good. Decent first match on the card.
Yeah.
Okay. And then all this, the bullcrap happened. It was like, well, I just totally wasted my time.
Yes, we all did. We all did watching this match, but that's the grind of the G1. If you want to watch all G1 matches, that will happen to you eventually. And it usually happens around this time of the tournament, to be quite honest, because the first two shows of these tournaments usually are pretty good. And then there is this hole that everyone falls into sometime down the road. And this was that show, actually. And
oh, yeah, that was definitely that show.
Pretty much booked it like that, too.
Yeah.
About Yujiro, I mean, yes, he is okay. He's an okay wrestler. The thing about him is he really has no redeeming qualities when it comes to being a G1 performer. Mm-hmm. Everything that he does feels forced. I've said it before, too. He doesn't move like a real boy. His movement is very, very wooden. His facial expressions are non-existent, basically, because he smiles all the time and tries to smile evil. Then he has Peter by his side, and most of the time, this is just like he's just there, and nothing ever happens. In the match with El Fantasmo, something happened at least. So they basically told a very fun story with that, going to the other show, right, where he had his match with Fantasmo. So he basically wanted to sell Peter off to El Fantasmo, which in and of itself was a fun story. Thing about it is that they just went back to this idea that one Bullet Club member will lay down for the other Bullet Club member and score the win. So that's the other part that Yujiro just brings. He just has no sense of anything novel. He does the most basic heel shtick that you can imagine, and he just goes through with it all the time. The only reason that he's in the tournament is that he's a New Japan true-born wrestler. That's it.
That's true. I mean, what you just said at the end there was definitely a factual statement. But, you know, I was really disappointed in the opening match with Finlay. I thought that I wanted Finlay to have a really good showing to turn some heads. I don't think this was a great start. I mean, we're on the verge of something where you hope, and I think both of those guys, you know, we're jumping ahead too much, to be honest. That's not even happened yet, but the match wasn't good. Like Finlay and Yujiro, it was one of the worst of the tournament. So.
And we continued on this show with Tama Tonga getting his first win over Chase Owens, so somewhat of a revenge for losing the Never Openweight title. In a match that was better than the first one in this tournament, I thought it was a decent showing by the two. Nothing that is must-see, of course. Chase Owens, I know that they think a lot of him because of what he did years ago, that he just jumped in and is this very... you can just count on the guy, apparently, when you're to the company, New Japan Pro Wrestling, and they reward him for that. That's fine. The guy is a decent enough wrestler, I guess, with Yujiro aligned there to be in the G1. Still, though, I would also say no redeeming qualities when it comes to G1 performer. And we saw it here. I mean, this is just as mediocre as you can have for a G1 climax match. Yeah, that's it.
This one, I mean, it was a little better, but to me, this is one where they actually have a little bit of an interesting thing in this match. Finlay and Yujiro have nothing with each other, like no storyline. This here, you have a bit of a rivalry with Tonga versus a Bullet Club guy. And I mean, you know, this is a very basic match, I thought, overall. You know, you have guys. Chase, the one thing he does give is that he tries hard, you know, and I get that feeling when I watch him wrestle. But like you said, it's just not, there's nothing there to really grab a hold of anything. And they tried some stuff with, like, you know, another thing I didn't like on this show, and also even Night 4, which was a better show, and it was something I noticed here. In this show, you had a bunch of spots in all three undercard matches, like, of the tournament, where they did the exact same spot, going for the chair over and over. It's like, we saw that in three straight matches.
Yeah.
And then the other one, in the fourth show, they all went outside and brawled and went into the guardrail. It's like you're doing these same things over and over, and it really wears on me watching these shows in one city, because it's like they're literally doing the same stuff. No creativity. Listen, Kidani was right. These matches are too repetitive.
Yes.
Like, why haven't they listened to this man? He's the only one that's trying to speak the truth in this company. But, you know, it was a very basic match, I thought, overall. You know, okay, you know, two-star type of match, pretty much,
yeah.
But not anything that anybody's going to care about, even by the end of the show. So, you know, I think both men This one, like, Finlay, I think we give him a kind of a pass. And even Yujiro, you knew the show stuff was going to ruin everything. This one, they should have done a little bit better. You know, I expected a little bit better, just considering the storyline, and then they just didn't.
Yeah, the highlight of the match probably was when they were on the outside, and when Chase Owens removed the mats around the ring, and Jado just put them back there. That was pretty fun, yes. Yeah, except for that, we can move on to the semi-main of the show, and that tells you everything about the show. Bad Luck Fale defeated Lance Archer by countout. So this has a rating of 3.71 on Cage Match and 1.5 star from Dave Meltzer. And I want to say, I was positively surprised by this match. Because when you expect nothing going into a match like this, there is a chance that you get a positive reaction out of it. And the positive reaction that I had was that I saw that Bad Luck Fale actually apparently tries. First time at G1 in 3 years. And I thought that at least he tried to get something going in this match. They had this god-awful finish, which is part of the rating, I guess. But except for that, I was mildly entertained by this match. I was, I would say I was more entertained by this match than from the Yujiro and David Finlay match. Not saying it was better or anything, but it was two big guys clashing with one another, and that's a good starting point, actually.
Yeah. You know, again, it's like a little bit better. None of these matches are anything you really want to rush out to see, but I will say this. The match was okay, and you sense the effort from somebody like an Archer. I always think of him, you know, his whole deal, everybody dies, and you're this huge badass. But, like, all of your spots are like, let's do athletic stuff. You know, and I'm not really into that. I wish that he would work more like somebody else who Fale would wrestle in a couple of nights. I think if he did that stuff more instead of doing the moonsaults and the dives and the flip sentons, he doesn't need to do that. And so I don't know why he seems to want to do that. I mean, in this match, it kind of makes sense against Fale. But, I mean, Fale, try, you know, maybe, you know, pretty much. And to me, it felt like try, but he's only capable of the most basic big man spots, you know, at this point. There was nothing here that was even a remotely standout, you know, and even he doesn't even look particularly vicious, to be honest with you.
No, he just looks huge, you know.
Yeah, he's like this big guy, but he doesn't, again, neither of these guys have that killer instinct for some reason that they should have as big,
you know, man. I recently watched the Brody King and Darby Allin match, and of course,
a perfect example, like that was an amazing match, not just
yes,
but yeah, go on.
And of course, Darby Allin is a much different opponent, but in this particular match, Brody King basically wrote a blueprint of how you're supposed to wrestle as a big guy. And Lance Archer maybe tried things here because he was wrestling Bad Luck Fale and will do more of his big man shtick when he wrestles other guys in this block. But seeing that match and comparing it to this, what Lance Archer brought here was just something completely different, and would love to see more of the Brody King stuff.
And it's something that's always a criticism. Even at AEW, he was like that. I don't understand. I mean, I get it, especially at AEW, you want to have spectacular moves and get over the fans. But look, I mean, just the reality is there's no way he's going to be more spectacular than a Darby Allin or a Dante Martin or a Kenny Omega or any of these guys. It's like, you're a big guy, and doing that's cool, but to really stand out, like Brody King, that match got rave reviews, and you know, obviously Darby is an amazing seller and everything, and so small that it made the match that much more when you can just grab the guy, pick him up by his belt, and the first ever belt assisted big swing, I think, in the Brody and Darby match.
Yes,
you know, even Grandpa Ken, the man who hates AEW more than any other person, I think he enjoyed that match and the tag as well on that show. But, you know, that's a good point. Like, that's something that you would want to see in some big guys here. Hopefully we see that going forward. I like to see that more because Archer, he always leans into the athletic stuff. And like I said, that's cool. But I want to see everybody dying. like throw people around, you know, toss them over the top rope, you know, give them big clotheslines, hit hard. You know, he can hit hard. You know, he can do great things, but I just, obviously this match, you weren't going to be able to do that, like I said. So I understand it somewhat in this match. I just think against an opponent like Fale, who's just so limited and basic. Like, even as a big guy, I want to see some killer instinct for some of these guys. And like I said, you know, compare these guys to even Brody King, obviously, is that top tier. But like Cobb, when he is able to do power stuff, he puts his ass into it. You know, like he is going to bring it and look great in both ways. And he even, you know, we'll talk about him more a little bit, but that's somebody that I think uses his size well. And he's not nearly as big as these two, but he uses it much better, in my opinion.
Yeah, he does. He really does. So, yeah, we'll see about how these two will proceed in their tournament. Well, we've seen already that Badluck Farley had another short match. That's probably what we could expect from him. The match against Jeff Cobb he had on the other day on the weekend was a 7-minute match, which, it started and ended pretty quickly with some big moves from Cobb. So good for him to get this win. What we can say is in this main event, or when you look at the show, it was pretty much clear that this Dylan, is it too harsh to say that this show was a cash grab? Because
that's a good way of saying it. Yeah,
it was a show that basically had one match that you could realistically expect to be very good, and this was the main event with Hiroki Goto and Tetsuya Naito, and everything else was very mediocre. So, yeah, they pretty much booked this arena and said, okay, we can get close to 2,000 fans with just booking Tetsuya Naito versus Hiroki Goto. Good for them.
It's nothing new for G1. There's always going to be shows like this where it looks rough on paper and it turns out to be rough as rough as you thought it may be afterwards. But I think this definitely is up there in one of the all-time least inspiring G1 shows I think I can remember.
Far cry from the first 2 days, much like I said. So
especially the second day, I thought was even better. Like that was like a great show, and then we go from that. Because remember, you had Taichi and Ishii and Kenta and Zack on that same show, and it was like, we're going from that to this. Like, you know, like big change.
But luckily, we had Tetsuya Naito and Hiroki Goto, and it's just a joy to watch these two wrestle because whenever they clash, you can feel how inspired they are from one another and how much they want a main event to be at least very good to great. And it's not only that they are inspired from, it's part of them being inspired from one another. They always, when they have a match, their matches are not the same match all the time because they change up little things here and there. For example, Hiroki Goto did this Olympic slam. And in the middle of the match, Goto brought out this hold, the Yurikamome, that Tetsuya Endo also does in DDT. And I haven't seen that in a while, actually. Which, the match also had a very, very good finish. So at least we got that, right?
And we saw him adopt the Shoto, his tag team finisher with Yoshihashi.
Mm-hmm.
He did a one-man version of it with the turnbuckle, basically. I thought that was really cool.
He also did the Shoten Kai big transitional move to lead to his finish. So everything about this was very good.
Yeah. You know, it's funny because I came away, and I have a theory on this, but like after we saw the second match with Naito, it really put it in perspective for me because I actually came away with a different opinion. I think Goto, definitely, you, all that is very, very true. And Naito, I liked his actual, just the things he did in the match was really cool because he was working over the arm a lot in this match too, doing a lot of stuff that, you know, maybe he wouldn't normally do in a lot of the normal matches. But I always felt like as the match went along, he was not hitting that fifth gear of his truly special matches, like with Tanahashi last year. And it was still a really good match. I mean, way above the other three matches. I mean, this was nearly, you know, bordering on a truly great match, I would say. Like, even their floor is still very high, right? But I thought he wasn't able to hit that fifth gear to really put it over the top. And we saw that again. And I have a theory on it after that. So I'm much more cool with it after seeing the second match. And this was a much better match than the other three. And, hey, Goto got the win. You know, the crowd reacted to it, too. You know,
he had this amazing speech after the match that he will always continue until his kid can say daddy won.
And his kid can say it.
Yes.
It's main event now. So he's accomplished his goals. You know, he's obviously a six-man champion right now. But that was a great win. And that was probably this was the only time. It shows you how good this match was. This crowd was dead the whole show. Mm-hmm. You know, like let's just call it what it is. You can't blame the crowd because the stuff they got was not worth getting excited about until this match.
And the thing about it is, I think this match, I mean, in comparison to all other matches on this show, this is an amazing match in comparison to anything else.
Yeah.
But I would say if there had been another match, like if we had, for example, seen, I don't know, Zack Sabre on this show, have a match with Kenta. Let's say they placed this match on this show. I'm very much sure that Goto and Naito would have had a better match, because the reason of them being in this tournament is to have the best match. And if there had been another match that you consider best match of the show, I think the work level would have been even higher in this match.
Yeah, you know, you might be right. I thought Goto put in a very impressive performance, and you made a great point. That's something. That's a reason why I've always thought he was one of the best. His moveset is so expansive that he's the one person that doesn't just have the same matches all the time among a lot of the main eventers, in my opinion, because he has such a great moveset that it enables him to do that.
Yeah, so, he gets the pinfall, can get the pinfall with his GTR, can get the pinfall with the, Gotoshiki, with the roll-up, with the cradle that he has. He has the Shoryu Kekai, the arm hold, a lot of variations, yes.
Yeah, go to heaven, we've seen him use it before. So it's like he's done a lot of great stuff, and it was a really good match. So a great start to the tournament for both men coming in there. I like the strategy, I like the work. The crowd started to get into it at the end. So to me, everything about this was a win overall.
Then we turn our attention to the two shows from Ottawa this past weekend. First day of the double shot drew 1,919 fans in Ottawa. Very good crowd for that venue right now, considering what other promotions do there. New Japan Pro Wrestling is pretty much at the top of the list. Let me see what Stardom did in May. We had that close to what Stardom did in May, a little bit more actually. So, yeah, on that show, we also had four G1 Climax matches, and it started out with Zack Sabre going over Aaron Henare. And Dylan, my opinion here is that this was a better match than Henare's win over Hiroshi Tanahashi. How about you?
Yeah, I think I can buy that. To me, they were both of similar quality. You know, both very solid matches. This, I think I would take this one over the Tanahashi match, though, if you asked me to pick one. But, you know, both very solid. To me, not super standout, which obviously with someone like Henare, you want to see him reach that next level. And I don't think they got it here in this match. But it was still a very good match, worth watching, obviously. They did a lot of stuff with the arm, obviously, with Zach coming in. But I thought the finish was very interesting, because Zach, to me, is very well known for his very intricate submissions, you know, like something grabbing all of your tendons, grabbing your leg, your arm, grabbing your neck. And here he won with an Achilles lock, you know, pretty much like the most basic hold, which I thought was very telling where they slotted Henare here, even after his win with Tanahashi.
I mean, there is the story background to it, because Henare was out with an Achilles tear for a long time.
Yeah.
So Zach,
that's a good point.
Zach initially started, was one of his first holds, actually. He went for the Achilles very early on in the match. And then, that's what I liked about the match. Henare then used his power and his strength to overpower Zack Sabre Jr. so that he couldn't really get his holds into where it really hurt Henare until the finish, when he went for his finish. And Zack Sabre basically, from there on, went to the Achilles hold. And it's actually correctly named the Sunday Rail Engineering Works Replacement Bus. That's what it's called. I don't know. I don't know why that is called that.
I'll tell you this. Henare's full Nelson that he came in here is named the Ultima, which is based off of Final Fantasy. Of course, a reference I get right away. Since he has the Final Fantasy, man, this guy, he's like my spiritual wrestler right now, because a lot of my moves when I wrestle is also named after video games. So he has the Ultima, and he has the Streets of Rage on there. What video game will he use next in his moveset? This is a storyline in and of itself for Henare right now. What will his next video game move be? And that's what I need to see before we go forward.
Continuing story here, we'll see. Maybe we can figure out a pattern of his video game taste here.
Okay, well, I mean, Streets of Rage is a pretty older game.
Final
Fantasy, which one did he like the best? Did you like 7 the best? Was it 8?
7?
10?
I would say 7.
Okay, well, yeah, you like 7. Okay, so you're a 7.
But he's much younger than I am, so maybe it's 9. I don't know.
9, I don't think, you know, I mean, some people like 9, but I mean, I think 7, 8, and 10 are the legacy games, I would say, for the Final Fantasy series, you know. I liked all of them. 10 was my first one. I went back and played the ones beforehand, obviously. 6, too, has a lot of supporters. But 7, I think, is the most popular one. So I think we could go with 7. I think that's a fair one. But listen, I'm not going to expect... Because we've seen people on AEW, the fans, put up these signs that are anti-Final Fantasy VIII. And they're lucky I wasn't in that crowd. Because I would have gripped up that sign. I would have gotten thrown out of that building if I had to. I'm not going to let people disparage Final Fantasy VIII, one of the most amazing love stories between Squall and Rinoa. Even the designer said his favorite scene was from that game, so how are you saying the game sucked? That's what I want to know to these Final Fantasy VIII haters right now. Look, I've got the pendant right now, the Lionheart. I wear this when I go out. It's right next to a Kingdom Hearts pendant as well, for more video game references. So if you're ripping on Final Fantasy VIII, just know that, you know... I'm not going to say I've lose all respect for you, but I will say that I'm disappointed. You know, I'm not angry. I'm just disappointed because Final Fantasy VIII is a great game, but it doesn't give enough love. Final Fantasy VII, everybody loves it and think it's the best, and I get it. I love it too. Tifa was like one of my original crushes in video games, okay? I love it. One of my move names was Final Heaven after hers. And obviously, Cloud's, you know, what a great character. Sephiroth, everybody loves him. One Winged Angel, Kenny Omega.
I was just going to say, Dylan, like when Kenny Omega returns, first thing he needs to do is not address like Bryan Danielson, Jon Moxley. The first thing when he returns is he needs to defend Final Fantasy VIII.
If he likes it, but if he doesn't like it, then I mean I've lost all respect for him. That happens, but because like Final Fantasy VII, he has the One Winged Angel, obviously the Sephiroth. Yeah. But you know if he disparages Final Fantasy VIII, then we're gonna have some heat. You know, again,
ooh.
You know, and I'm not ready for that right now, String. I want to be a positive influence right now. I'm trying to bring positivity. That's why I'm defending something that should be beloved. But some people hate on it for some reason. And I cannot allow that. But long story short, the match was good.
Like the technical versus power aspect of it. So it was a good start.
Yeah, good start to the show.
I still get like confused when they talk about Block C. Because in years past, Block C usually was the block of those that didn't make the cut for the G1 Climax. So whenever someone talks about Block C, I think, didn't they include Hinari once again into the tournament? How dare they? But luckily he is. And Block D...
I was about to say, what do you think about Block D?
Block D is there too, and we had the heat for this match, Dylan. The crowd was there. Yoshihashi was there. Shingo Takagi was there. This was just an amazing display of these two guys basically acknowledging, oh yeah, we do have the same moves. Let's just bring them all out. And they had this 18-minute match that ended with Shingo Takagi winning. And thing about it is we always say it with Yoshihashi, you can rarely buy that he ever wins a match because he never wins a match. But the effort level is always there to the degree that you will always, at least in the end, in the final portions, in the final 1 or 2 minutes, will buy into the fact that, yes, maybe this one could be the finishing 3-count for Yoshihashi. But in the end, it never is. That the effort that he showed is not only that he's a great wrestler, but I think especially in this match, it was so clear that this guy is incredibly charismatic when he hooked the fans for the final 30 seconds to 45 seconds, I would say. He hooked the fans so much that everybody should have been glued to the screen and just support this great underdog babyface. And I mean, he didn't face a heel, but he faced a guy that is much more accomplished than he is in New Japan Pro Wrestling as a singles guy. And everything about it was just great, including the finish, because you'd expect, as the story was, them to finish with their big finishing holds, or at least use them. And Shingo Takagi then in the end won it with a ground cobra twist. Another good way to display that he's also able to burst out different things, different moves, and not only go back to his pumping bomber, his last falconry, and the Made in Japan. So there is a variety to Shingo Takagi, and there is a variety to Yoshihashi as well, because he used most of his arsenal that he had. And this was very much, very clearly the best match of the show.
Oh, I completely agree with that. I think it's up there. I would put the Kenta and Zach match above this.
Me too.
But Like, this is right there with Taichi and Ishii as the second best match. And I love this match. Not just the moves, how they did them, but there was really amazing psychology in this match. And all the stuff you said about Yoshihashi is true. To me, I consider him one of the absolute best wrestlers in this entire company. And I think he proved it once again here at Shingo. Like you said, very well accomplished. Not just the moves, but the psychology of everything. Because he spent a long part of this match, Shingo did. He was going after Yoshihashi's arm at a point, you know, snapping his arm over his shoulder, you know, going to the outside with the apron, going into the guardrails. You know, he was doing all of that. And they did the entire match. He was working the arm. He's going for that Cobra twist. He didn't just do it for the finish. He went for it multiple times. And Yoshihashi kept firing back. And we saw an amazing sequence of moves where he went for, you know, he was going for that last Valkyrie, Last of the Dragon, as it's known in New Japan, but much better as Last Valkyrie. But more than anything, it's like he went back and forth where it's like, okay, he went up Yoshihashi. Because remember, at this point, too, Shingo had hit the Made in Japan. And he kicked out of that. He went for the Last of the Dragon. And then Yoshihashi slipped out. He kept going out and making sure that he couldn't hit that move. He hit the Backstabber at one point, but then Shingo riled right back up, hit the Pumping Bomber. He went for it again, then an amazing counter with the DDT out of the Last of the Dragon. That was really great. And then he hit his move, which is the same move as the Made in Japan, his version, the Karma. But he couldn't get the pin because of his arm that had been worked over the whole match. And like you said, he was so charismatic, like he was living and dying just to get over there to make this cover. And when he finally did it, he kicked out of it at the end. But even the stuff like with the flip pile driver, they worked that so well because it's like Shingo was fighting this the whole time.
Yeah.
He was going for the flip pile driver, but he couldn't get it. And then he tried to transition into the butterfly lock. But he fought that out, too, and then he was able to reset and then finally hit the flip pile driver. And I was like, ah, that's so great, because it's like they made it feel like a struggle. You know, in most other matches, everything would be super clean, and everything would go just how, like it always goes. But here, they fought it off, and then, you know, he was riled up. But in the end, Shingo, you know, he went for Karma one more time, but Shingo slipped out of that, locked in the Cobra twist that he'd done multiple times, and then pulled that back into a reverse cradle for the pin. It made Yoshihashi look like a threat. It had a hyper-competitive match. The fans were into it because, like you said, Yoshihashi is an amazing underdog. And Shingo works great. This hasn't really been his role in the company just because his stature is not as big as some of the other guys. But if you remember him in Dragon Gate, he's great as a bully, you know, beating up some guy lower on the totem pole than him. This wasn't like a bully heel match, but it was really great psychologically, great hard hitting. This had all of the closing stretch stuff that you would see in the main event, except the whole match was actually good instead of just the last couple of minutes, like we've seen in so many other New Japan matches. But it's like this, the whole match was great. And it's like they could all be this good, except they're not as good as these two is the problem. Like a lot of these guys, or they just choose not to be, because I think they could be if they adopted a lot of what this match had. And I thought it was like a perfect match for this role in the tournament. So yes, I thought this was a legit great match. I would still put Kenta and Zach above it, but right up there is one of the best top three at worst of the tournament so far.
Yeah, absolutely. So what came after that was one of Toru Yano's very rare serious performances, and they brought it up on English commentary that he usually does that when he faces Okada. And they also brought up Umanosuke Ueda, who was a very famous brawler back in the day, and brought up that Toru Yano bleached his hair blonde because of his legacy. And he was this vicious guy that came into this match to defeat Okada, and he was not the clown that he usually is. So that made the match, in my opinion, very interesting and actually one of Toru Yano's best matches in years, I would say. I'm just looking at his matches. Actually, it is not as far up as I thought it would be. 2022, let's see. It barely makes the first 50 matches, actually. There's other matches from the last couple of years that are rated much higher. For example, from 2018, his matches against Tanahashi and Kota Ibushi was rated much higher. Last year's Hiromu match, it was not the G1, it was the New Japan Cup, is rated higher than that. But except for that,
era of New Japan Cup, what they did in June.
Yes, exactly. But except for that, I
really... at the end, I remember that.
Oh, yeah, right. Except for that, I thought it was one of Toriano's best G1 matches in years and years, just because of him being different than he usually is and bringing a mean streak to Okada, who really had to fight and claw because it didn't look like that he was expecting it like that. Finish, in my opinion, was very weak with the money clip. I don't know why that was, but Toriano just basically laid on his stomach and just pretended dead, and the ref just called it. Would have been much better if they just finished it with the with Okada just sitting on him for the pinfall that he has used before. But except for that, it was good.
This Yano stuff is a direct reference to his original gimmick that he had. Mm-hmm. So 2007 to, you know, when Chaos first started, when Nakamura was starting it, where he was more like, his character was, obviously now he's more of a comedic clown, like you said, the clown guy, but his original character was that of a sleazy, you know, heel. Pretty much. He comes to the ring with sake instead of the water. You know, he did that all the time, you know, and like back then, the chair was a big part of it. And we saw kind of, you know, the heel version of a lot of his normal spots that we have now. Because like you said, this is different than what he was doing before, or even what he did. I can't remember the last time he came out with a sake or anything like that. It feels like, you know, it's been a long, long time since we've seen that level there. So he was calling back to his original Chaos gimmick. I don't know why like he picked now to do it. But it was welcome. It was a welcome change. Ultimately, he's a clown because he's not actually that good of a wrestler, you know, when he tries now. So it's like there's a ceiling to this match. It wasn't a great match. You get the novelty of it being like this. But to me, like you said, the finish on top of it, and like Okada to me, you know, this felt like a totally going through the motions level match. He was put in a different situation, but I didn't sense any kind of heightened effort again from him at all. And I like with Naito, I came up with a reason for it. Okada, this just felt like a nothing match, which it was, and he had every right to portray it that way, hence him using the money clip as the finish instead of a rainmaker, which would have made a lot more sense for the fans, but whatever. And like I said, it was okay. Like, you know, for a Liano match, it was better than most, you know, average match, I would say, which again, for that standard is very high. You know, so much better than the Jonah match that we saw for the first time, I would say, for Yano. So if he continued this, that would be fine. But that's just not his role anymore. You know, back then, this was before the comedy stuff. You know, he was meant to be a dirty heel, just like Iizuka was at the time. They were a tag team. But, you know, I was like, so I don't expect this to last for any extendable measure. But for one night, it was fun, you know, and I enjoyed it more than most Yano matches. But still, it wasn't a match that anybody that needs to go back and watch, I would say.
So you already talked about main event matches. Next, for the main event for this show, we had Jay White with Gedo going over Tomohiro Ishii. And at the beginning of the match, they had the usual clowning with Jay White pretending that this will be an easy win. And Gedo just could sit there and put his legs up on the chair so Jay White could start the match. And what did you think about it?
Just like I said, the last few minutes were great. The rest of the match was not. So,
yeah. We got a little less talking, I figured, than in the opening. But, Dylan, what was that post-main event promo? What did he think he was doing? Did he think this would go over with the crowd? Or, I mean, everybody just sat there confused.
I said this after the first match was Sonata, when he was trying to rile up the crowd. I was like, wow, why would you do that in this particular circumstance right now? And this one, you know, he was like, hey, I'm going to cut a promo in Japanese.
Yes.
And then he started clapping, you know, like the clap crowds and stuff. But it definitely was a dud of a promo. I guess you could find it kind of confusing as a foreigner, I guess. But
I guess so. You know, I think he went on because he figured if he goes on, some fans would actually find it funny because he just goes on with the joke and just wouldn't let go.
Jay comes across to me like a guy who thinks he's like a wrestling genius.
Yeah.
With a lot of his stuff in matches. And you hear it a lot of his fans, they adopt these talking points like, oh, he's so great at the little things. But actually, he comes across, the more I watch him, as kind of a low wrestling IQ guy, to be honest with you. And not a good wrestler at all. And I don't see anything in him. Like, I think he's really one of my least favorite performers, actually, to watch here.
I can't get behind his character, you know. The character is so unoriginal.
Because it's all generic heel tropes.
Yeah, he's the heel. I mean, he could be very good. I mean, I've defended him lots and lots on this show, and I do think that he actually has a way to be a great character, and he has a very good care for detail, I think. But this character, that's true.
I agree with that he does care and he does put detail. Yeah, I agree with that.
But this character that he is going with now is none of that. He is just a dude that will ridicule his opponent whenever he can, when he is on top, and when he gets his comeuppance, he acts shocked, and that's his entire shtick, basically. That is what he's doing. So nothing of that what we used to see in his first run as the Switchblade when he came in, where he had this mean streak, this vicious mean streak. None of that actually is part of his character right now, because his character right now is I talk shit and sometimes get beaten. That's it.
I think there was a way to use this match in a better way than they actually did it, because they had a story coming into here with Ishii being the one who eliminated him a couple of years ago on the last night.
And they did the same spots, actually. The finish that they did in 2020, and also Chris Charlton commentary mentioned it as well, but they used it for a transitional moment in the match.
Yeah. You know, there were some good starts to this match, though, I will say. Ishii's such an incredible wrestler. You know, like I said, a lot of the early goings, I mean, Jay in the early going was dominant in this match over Ishii. He was controlling this match up and down pretty much. Even at times, you know, maybe Gato would come in and interfere and stuff at times too, which I obviously never loved pretty much. But the spot where this match started to turn around, they started to grab me, was after Jay finally, he had been dominating this match. And then he hit a superplex, and Ishii fired up, came right up, and just shoved him into the corner, like, with a pounce, almost. Like, and I thought that was, like, a brick wall, and he was like, come on! And it was like, okay. Like, after that one spot from Ishii, it's like, I'm into this match now, that was awesome. Like, where will this go next? And they ended up going with, they had a much better match from that point forward. But again, Gato came up involved. He tripped Gato. You know, Ishii was looking for a big lariat, but Gato tripped him there. And then they did my favorite spots of all, the counters upon counters upon counters that Ishii should never, ever do. I respect him far too much to acknowledge it. I tried to black that out from my brain.
Yeah, I was thinking of you when I saw that. Specifically that part of the match, I was thinking, okay, yeah, that's completely Dylan's line of loving wrestling.
And it was like, they were doing so good. Like I said, the early part I thought was like really boring, in all honesty, and not interesting at all. But when Ishii fired up and they started to go back and forth, I was like, okay, this is getting really good. I see why people will like this match. And then they started to do that stuff that I hate so much. And I was like, I hate you. Why do you do this, Jay? Like, you were having a pretty decent match. And that's what I'm saying. Like, I could never get into matches because there's never any positive momentum to be gained. You know, whenever something good's about to happen, they start to fire up. Oh, here's Gato to interfere. They start to fire up. Oh, here's Jay to make fun of his opponent and stall the match and waste everybody's time. Oh, we're going to have a good finishing stretch. But wait a minute, we got to do 27 counters in a row that looks totally fake and BS, and like they're dancing with each other. And I don't want to see this. I don't want to see any of that stuff. And so it was better than the Sonata match, but I can't enjoy these matches. So I'm trying to be objective in them, but I don't enjoy anything that he ever does. And I think he's a really bad champion, to be honest. So I hope whatever they have planned for this, you know, you mentioned it earlier, the Bullet Club and the House of Torture, they've never really expanded upon virtually anything between these two. But whatever they have planned, I hope it's really, really good to justify what we're seeing.
I wouldn't get my hopes out here.
Oh.
Oh. Well, this was the fourth day of the G1 from Ottawa. Back-to-back shows there on Sunday. 2,518 fans, even better than the Saturday show. And of course, this had the Hiroshi Tanahashi versus Tetsuya Naito main event, which sold a lot of more tickets than Jay White and Tomohiro Ishii could do. And we've already briefly touched on El Fantasmo versus Yujiro Takahashi, the match where Fantasmo basically won over Peter. Is she now officially with him? I don't know.
Let me say something about this match. I thought I thought this was not a bad match. Actually.
Me too. Me too.
Because even like even the dumb stuff with Show, unlike the match with Finlay where it took over the match and it ruined everything, here they used it. Phantasmo was always a step ahead. And I think that's the one way this style can work, where he, if you could get a guy, you know, ostensibly a babyface, even though he's been more of a heel so far, it looks like he's running with more of a babyface run right now in his first two matches of the tournament. Obviously, he had a really strong match with Ospreay on night one. And then you had here, I thought this way overachieved on my expectations. You know, Phantasmo, he, you know, he got the better of Yujiro right away, where he faked laying down. Yujiro was like, hey, if you let me win, I'll let you have Peter or whatever. And ELP was like, yeah. And so he laid down, and then he did the trick. And by the end, Yujiro, or Show came out with the wrench, and he went right after Show, but Show tossed the wrench to Yujiro. But then he countered with a low blow of his own. So to me, that's a babyface spot. Like, that's exactly what I would do in real life. I know everyone's going to go with a low blow, but to me, that's a babyface spot.
But another babyface spot was his dive to the outside as well.
Yeah, so take out Show. And that led right to the finish, where he dove after Show and then went up and hit the Thunder Kiss 86 onto Yujiro. So he looked smart and good and likable and like a cool babyface. And then he got to make out with Peter. Like, what's cool? What's cooler than that?
He won in every aspect of the game here, and I really think that he showed that he can be a very good babyface down the line. Whenever he gets rid of the Bullet Club thing or whenever they turn on him, I think there is stories to tell with El Phantasmo as a babyface, because the dynamics, as you said, it worked out well here. And Phantasmo...
He still did some of the backbreaking in the match, so he kind of kept a hold of
it. Yeah, but that's more of a troll job than a real move.
And the way he did it was like, I'm keeping this part that everybody knows of me, even though I'm wrestling a little bit different. He's like, I'm keeping the spot that maybe it got over to some of his fans.
Yes, exactly. And man, this was his second good match in the tournament. We really liked the Will Ospreay match. And I mean, completely vindicated for him as a G1 performer. He's better than a lot of other guys in this tournament.
I said going in, I think he's a sleeper candidate to win that block. He has a match on the last night. I think they really like this guy, and I think he's a guy that's showing he's wrestling with the confidence of somebody that knows that the company believes in him. We saw it all throughout the Best of Super Juniors. Well, not all throughout, because he had some bad matches, but when he really tried, you saw what he could be. Like, we saw what he could do in the Best of Super Juniors. But now in the G1, he's continuing that momentum. And look at it, like you said, he's got a really good run in him, and I'm really turning the corner on him. He's somebody that I really didn't like for a long, long time. I honestly didn't see anything in him actually as a wrestler, but you're starting to see things change, and I'm starting to turn around. And I'm like, hey, listen, this guy's starting to prove himself, and I love it. I'm really happy to see that, because it's a guy I definitely have not enjoyed a lot over the years, but I'm really starting to turn the corner on him, and I think he's doing a great job. I will say this though, that stuff. Now they played it. After he made out with Peter and walked off with her, Show and Yujiro, it was like a comedic heel, like, what? Like, that type of spot, pretty much.
It was pretty.
It was like a comedic spot. Would they continue? Is that going to continue, or is Peter just going to be back with Yujiro?
Yeah, that's the question we'll have to see with Yujiro's next match. What I say about Show, though, I mean, it was a comedic spot, but Show has one facial expression, much like Yujiro. He always looks like shocked. This is his only emotion that he has.
Just about everything.
Yeah, his mouth wide open, can't believe what he's seeing. That is his one emotion that he has as a heel.
And it's sad, because you know that that's not how he used to be. You know, at the end of the day, he's already shown that wasn't how he used to be before. I mean, maybe a little over emotive as a babyface, but you know, it just that sucks when you do that. But I will ask you one more thing about Phantasmo before we move on. Do you think that they see him as some kind of, like, heartthrob type of guy? Like an idol-style wrestler? Because I'm not trying to hate on this guy, but I was surprised if that is the case on there. It's going to be interesting.
Don't get the vibe, actually.
Yeah, I don't think so either. Even someone like Jay, I think, has a little bit of that to him. Without the beard. Like I said, he has a little bit of that to him, or like Sonata, obviously. We haven't talked to him about him, but like Phantasmo as like an idol wrestler, I think that's going to be interesting, or like a heartthrob babyface. If that's the plan, that's going to be interesting going forward. But I thought it was a very good match, way overachieved, and good for both of them. Even Yujiro, like Yujiro, brought out some of his bigger moves. He did the Miami Shine in this match. He hadn't done that in a while.
It was a long match with 50 minutes.
Yeah, they worked a decent style of match, like psychologically going after the DDT, although I hate that pimp juice. It's such a lame move.
Yeah, like, the way he puts together his big moves, they just go all over the place, because usually you would go for the biggest move in the end, but he apparently just goes through it like he introduced the moves into his career.
Yeah, and it's like and like you saw that he has a pretty diverse moveset if he wants to use it. But yeah, he's always so focused on these DDT moves that just are very weak. But I thought he had a good match. I thought he performed pretty well here. Again, it's nothing that's like going to threaten 5-star ratings or anything like that, but it was a good match and a good opener to the show.
Yeah, from PETA being mistreated by Yujiro Takahashi and then, I would say, rightfully leaving because he tried to sell her off for 2 points.
Absolutely.
So, completely right move from Peter. We went to Miho Abe being completely faithful with her guy, with Taichi coming to the ring with him. And Taichi lost the match to Sanada. And I thought this finishing stretch was really, really good. I really liked the fire that both guys brought. Overall, I thought this was a very good match with the finish coming from the O'Connor Bridge from Sanada, who basically surprised Taichi with that, because he also had some portions of the match where he looked like the clear winner and he had his ghetto clutch in. But Sanada got the win with the surprise pin in the O'Connor Bridge. Thought it was good. What did you think?
I really liked this match. I thought this was another one that over-delivered upon my expectations. You know, I come in thinking, Sanada Taichi, what's this going to be? And Taichi obviously had an incredible performance versus Ishii. Sanada and Jay, I didn't love by any stretch of the imagination. But I like what we've seen so far from both of these men. I think Taichi's definitely been one of the stronger competitors of the whole tournament, believe it or not. I think he has to be ranked up there. Sanada, he's not doing anything to embarrass himself, you know, like some botching moves or being sloppy or anything like that. And like you said, he actually brought a little bit of emotion here. I think Taichi, his style of the, like the Kawada kicks and stuff, that really set a fire in him a little bit. And, you know, I always say this about Taichi. For a long time, I hated him doing the Kawada spots, right? I thought they looked so bad. And I always go back to the Baba show where he was doing them with Kawada commentary, and they cut to Kawada.
Whenever they bring up Kawada on commentary, I think about these few shots of Kawada.
And he was just so
annoyed. Annoyed.
Not even that. It was like he was dead behind the eyes. he could have been watching paint dry. He was so unmoved by this Tai Chi performance. And now I'm at the point where he does them. They're obviously not as good as Kawada's. I don't think anybody would say that unless you're just a lunatic of a person. But they look well enough, you know, at the end of the day, to where they're a believable part of his offense. And like I said, they really inspired Sanada. Obviously, a lot of the trolling with the Gato clutch, he went back and forth to that, obviously. And that led to some good stuff there. Sanada, like you said, got the win. I think that really fits his character, the Japanese leg roll clutch. I think that's a great way to finish it. I didn't like the spot where he, like I said, and the way he set it up in this match was really good, where he set up the skull end with that, where it was like he hit the TKO and then he went right to the skull end. But then, of course, he let it go to do the rolling moonsault, you know, the rolling body press there. And it's like, oh, man, you have this move and it doesn't look great, but you always let it go and then it gets countered when you do the moonsault. But so I hope he sticks more to the flash pin. I think that's a role that would really benefit him. And that's something I always say, like when I want to fantasy book a tournament, I like having different styles of people in there. There should be a flash pin guy. There should be a shooter. There should be a big guy. Like, I want all the different styles, a high flyer, like comedy, all of them. Like, you want different styles. And I think he would be great in that role if they wanted to use him more of that. Like, a guy who's a flash pin specialist, pretty much, always going for roll-ups and stuff. I think that would really help his style. But I thought, overall, even this style was a very good match. I'd recommend this match, actually. I thought it was good.
Yeah, and they also went to another style during the match where they went to a sumo portion. That is something that Taichi has now adapted to his arsenal with not only the strike, but also like the tossing around. That's really cool to see, and it's really over with the crowd, especially in Tokyo, where they used to do very big sumo tournaments.
That's like, to me, like a comedy spot, but in a good way. It's yeah. not like a world breaking spot where the referee has to look away and look stupid. And you have to, guys. Yeah. Like it's like a comedy spot done right. You know, pretty much where you get the crowd to pop for it. It's obviously a little silly. I mean, I don't think Taichi would have much of a career in a sumo game. Like, you know, I mean, we don't know. Maybe he would. Maybe he has some kind of secret technique that we don't know about. And that secret technique, I think, is the pec flex, which is what we saw in this match as well between Sonata and Taichi, which is another fun comedy spot. It was goofy, but I know a lot of people liked it.
Yes. So we briefly touched on the next match as well. What to say, though? Once again, I thought that Bad Luck Fale at least tried here, and the match was centered around Jeff Cobb being able to lift the guy. He got him up for the Tour of the Islands. That was the entire point of this match. They delivered. It is a rating of 4.89. I wouldn't be as harsh on the match, but I wouldn't go over 5 points either.
Yeah, that feels about right. Again, Fale, just such a basic big guy, but it's not like he did anything to embarrass himself here either. Again, that's all I asked for.
Yeah,
just don't want things to go off the rails where it's so obvious you don't give a damn about this match and like nobody should care about anything. He didn't do that. He was working basic spots. You know, he stood on top of Cobb, you know, like, you know, that's the level we're looking at here. Like, it's nothing that's gonna, you know, change your life watching him wrestle. Maybe do a big splash in the corner, but like you said, for 5 minutes or
Seven minutes
or however long it was. Probably the 6.5 of that was Fale doing that. And then Cobb finally fired up at the end. And I was really impressed with how Cobb sold, actually, because usually in New Japan, he's booked as the big guy in a lot of his matches, the power dude that does a lot of cool stuff like that. But here against Fale, obviously, he was the smaller man. So he played his role very well as like a very good underdog babyface. And I think I still continue to be impressed by him and as how he's grown over the years. And obviously, like you said, the Tour of the Island spot was just a very cool spot at the end in the match. And that's all this match needed to be. Like Fale, basic heel, big guy spots. Cobb does impressive power, sells good. This was as good as it could have been. And it's not like it's any kind of great match by any stretch of imagination. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that for what they could have done, this was exactly what it should have been. They hit every goal they needed to. And in the end, it was a positive match overall.
Yes, it was. So finally, final topic, Block C, once again with Hiroshi Tanahashi going over Tetsuya Naito. Naito 0-2 after two matches. That's basically his back is against the wall very early on in the tournament because there aren't as many matches as there used to be in the block stages. For Naito, he now needs to win all of his matches to have a chance to advance to the semifinals. And this match, Dylan, was one of those. I have always said that I love these Tanahashi and Tetsuya Naito matches. And in recent years, I've always said that whenever there was a big main event on top, but there was another match with Tanahashi and Naito, I usually come away loving the Tanahashi and Naito series much more than anything else. And this match was very similar to it because you could just sit down and look at these two get to work. And I think that they also listened to what Kidani said because in this match, they did some stuff that was different from their usual match. The ground floor for their matches is always at least very good because they have a clear chemistry that they use and that they work with one another. One of the key moments, of course, here was Tanahashi missing the high fly flow. And I want to say, they really worked hard. I mean, Tanahashi did the high fly flow a couple of times, and the one that he landed right on the, like, in the middle of the ring, he came down hard. And we're at the point of his career where I always fear for his safety because he's now 45 years old and he still does these amazing high spots that just go hard on the body. And this key moment was here when Naito tried to roll him up with a jackknife hold, a finish that they've used before. So they have this clear threat that they go through with their matches, but they used it to surprise everybody, because usually Tanahashi does this flipping senton from the top. And this is a spot where recently I sat there and watched a Tanahashi match, and I figured, would be nice if he did something different for a change. And in this match, he fucking did. He just didn't do the flipping senton, but he just came down from the ropes and just kicked Naito's knee that was hurt last year in the G1 Climax, which was an amazing, amazing spot. And that completely caught Tetsuya Naito off guard, where what then led to him losing the match in the end to the small package hold. Another hold that Tanahashi has used in years and years past as one of his go-to finishing moves, but he rarely brings it out these days, but he uses it on special occasions like these G1 shows, where he then, yeah, has the guy caught off guard, and that worked out pretty, pretty well here. So, yeah, amazing match.
Yeah, this was a very good match, obviously. And what would you expect with Tanahashi, one of the best ever, the master of psychology in the ring? Naito, there was a lot of different stuff here. We saw them go back into a lot of callback spots, too. We saw the Puma Blanca at one point from Naito, the submission hold that he uses.
I bought that as a moment of desperation from Naito, because it was right after the time when Tanahashi kicked his leg, and so he tried to get him to the ground to also like weaken Tanahashi there.
Yeah, it was all really cool. Like you, I noted the senton fake out into the stomp on the leg, because it was such a good spot. It kind of told me where they want Naito to be at in this tournament in general, in my opinion. I think they're setting the stage for a big run for Naito.
Yes.
Is basically the big point of this match, because then that's a very heelish spot. Like, you normally do a flip spot, but nah, screw that. I'm just stomp the guy's leg, which is very logical. But, you know, we saw Naito come back. I will say, like, their standard is so high over the years. Even last year, they were having, like, a match of the year level match. They're always seem to be matched up in these G1s. They always have amazing matches, one of the best in the tournament. And they should, because they're an amazing rivalry. I think Naito, I don't know if this is popular or not, but I think he's actually as good. I actually think he's a better opponent than Okada for Tanahashi. If you look at their series, just in ring.
A very popular opinion with me, at least.
Yeah. Like, the in-ring, I mean, obviously the legacy is with Okada and Tanahashi, but just in terms of matches, I still remember their Dominion match where Tanahashi won the title with the Cloverleaf.
Yes.
And it seems like these two are always, you know, I mentioned it with Goto earlier, but I think we do have to give Naito a lot of credit, and we have to give Tanahashi credit as well. Like, they're more willing to think outside of the box with some of their finishes sometimes. And like you said, using this inside cradle, that was one of his original, you know, finishing moves, like the high-speed version that he used to do, where he'd run up into it pretty much. And then, you know, remember the match with Nakamura where he won with the Dragon Suplex like 10 years after he used that as his finisher. So he's always willing to bring out some of the old spots here. And I absolutely loved the finish. I thought it was just completely awesome. I do think, again, there was a fifth gear that they've hit before that I don't think they quite got here. Mm-hmm. But it's a small, you know, a small potatoes criticism in the grand scheme of things, because this was still a great match and one that's going to stand out. And ultimately, this match was a big time match in the scope of the tournament.
Yes.
Even on night five, and I think that's something you can't do in a lot of the other, you know, A block, B block type of tournaments. Two matches in, and like you said, if he loses another match, he's not going to make it. His only hope is to win all of his matches now, which is a common trope that Gato uses. I honestly thought that he would do that with Okada this year, because you had some
easy losses. I also had a similar feeling to that, which is why I picked Okada to lose his first match, actually, and then make a big run.
Yeah, like lose the first two matches and then run up. Like, that's what I thought for Okada. And Yano can beat anybody, and it wouldn't have mattered. But they went away from that, and they gave it to Naito instead. So, to me, I think that opens up a lot of interesting talking points for this block now, because if you look at how they've done it, you know, his two losses are against Goto and Tanahashi.
Yeah.
Those guys probably aren't going to win the block, in all likelihood. The main competition would be Evil.
Right.
And that's his next opponent. So he set things up perfectly to where he can win and Evil can win all of his matches, but Naito will have the advantage head-to-head. And you know, they could easily Goto could lose all of his next matches for all we know with how they use him. That's not what I want. I do think he'll be alive on the last day, but remember Tanahashi, he's not wrestling on that last day. His last match is before that.
Mm-hmm. Tanahashi's out. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So you have to think that he might not be alive then. Goto, I think, will be alive, but it's obvious that he's, you know, he's probably not going to win the block at all.
Yes.
Like this. So
I'm really interested.
That's a great storyline. Yeah, but go on.
Yeah, yeah. I'm really interested in that match because this will, of course, get a lot of heat just because Naito's back is against the wall. He needs to win this match. There will be a lot of shenanigans from Evil and his House of Torture mates. But that should really lead to a match that gets the crowd invested into the match. Thing, though, is when Evil turned, the matches they had were really, really bad.
Yes.
In 2000, when was it? 2019? 2020?
2020. It was in the middle pandemic.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, right. Those matches were really bad. So really interested to see what they can bring out here now.
I'm sure the match quality will be very low. I think Evil will not have a good match in this tournament, if I had to predict. But, you know, it's just interesting how they've laid this out overall, because you would think that would be the last, you know, that shouldn't be the first match after his big winning streak, you know, overall. Like, it should be the end of the line. That should be his final boss, so to speak, to climb mm-hmm. over. And he faces Zach on the last night, I believe.
Yeah, also New Japan Cup final, of course, and the rematch from last year where Naito got injured, so there is another story to tell there.
Yeah, I think that they're going to take advantage of that for this block, because early on I thought Evil would win the block, to be honest, but with the fun thing about this tournament, or the funny thing, is Evil hasn't wrestled yet. You know,
yes.
Great Okan, not wrestled yet. Filthy Tom, not wrestled yet. So it's like we have all these guys. Some guys have two matches, and then another guy, he hasn't wrestled at all.
It's
so
really tough to look at the standings right now and make anything out of it, because just like you mentioned, some guys have four matches left, others two.
And so this was the only one that really felt like you could read anything into it, because Naito going 0-2, that's mm-hmm. an obvious red flag that he's about to get a big push based on the past years. Wouldn't it be fun, though? Right, I don't think this is going to happen. I think there's a pretty good chance Naito wins the block now, even though I thought it would be Evil at first. Wouldn't it be an interesting story, especially for someone like a Naito? I think this would actually fit perfectly for. We saw it in the N1 a couple of years ago. What if somebody, a big name, lost all of their matches, like in this short run?
Yeah.
And that built to it. I don't think it's going to happen, but I think that would be an interesting story.
Similar to the first G1 with Riki Choshu.
Now that one's very memorable, like, because they took advantage of that, like they did that right. And the first N1 they did that with Marufuji, where he lost all of his matches, but then they didn't take advantage of that. Like it went basically nowhere. But I think with a Naito, you could easily make that comparison. Bring in Riki Choshu as his mentor or something like that afterwards.
Yeah, and there is this portion of Naito where he's really desperate right now, where he thinks he needs to be in the main event of the Tokyo Dome, and the pressure he's put on himself may be too big. Would be an interesting story, but I think we are much more in the ghetto patterns where he just wins.
I think it's pretty strong possibility that he wins the block now, even though I thought it would be Evil at first. But with this story, like I said, I thought this is what they would do with Okada, but instead they've kind of gone with Naito as that. And I think it fits him very well, so I'm not even criticizing that. But that's what I'm saying. His first two matches, I don't think he quite hit that fifth gear that he's known for, or he's done a lot of times before. But I think he will. I think that may have been deliberate more than a flaw or something, you know, like that he wasn't doing. I think that may have been a deliberate strategy. Now, when we see, by the time the Zach match comes around, I think they're going to have a really special match at the end. The crowd's going to be really buying into him. Down in the dumps, Naito, he started off 0-2, and now he has a chance to advance. I think that's going to be a big match by the end.
Yes, I think so too. So this was the fifth day of the G1 Climax, and we're heading to a doubleheader in Kirkenhall. This will be the next two shows that we will talk about, Dylan. Some interesting matches coming up there. Tom Lawler, as you said, he hasn't wrestled yet, gets his first G1 Climax match against Lance Archer. We have Great Okan against Chase Owens, Kenta versus Evil in Evil's first match. And then, of course, the big main event between former tag team partners, David Finlay and Juice Robinson. Juice and Finlay both had a very mediocre start to the tournament, I would say. So they really should be motivated to deliver a great main event for Kurakin.
They have all the story, all the reason to. Totally agree with you. Neither man started off very well. I think Juice probably has more upside to the company, but I think both men will benefit from a big match here that will get people talking.
Yes. Second show on the 27th has Will Ospreay versus Yujiro Takahashi, Toru Yano versus Bad Luck Fale, Hiroki Goto versus Aaron Hanare. I'm looking at that match to be possibly the best of the show. Maybe Tomohiro Ishii and Tama Tonga can be in a similar pattern. The other show, I think, has better matches on it.
Yeah, that's a typical mid-tour type of G show, Yano Fale type of level. But yeah, I'm with you. Goto and Hanare is the match I would peg if I had to predict one that would stand out. But who knows? Ishii, he's done his best so far throughout the tournament. He had a great match with Taichi. Let's see what they can bring to the table. I'm into it. Not all of the matches have hit with me, and especially Jay. I don't see what other people see in him at the end of the day. And it takes away from my enjoyment a lot when he's the main guy. But overall, as a tournament, I think the tournament's been pretty fun, actually. Yeah. For the first five minutes, I've pretty much enjoyed watching this tournament up and down. You even had the Yano surprise versus Okada. You had, Taichi's had a great run so far, somebody fun to watch. You get a lot of good things. Goto getting a big win early on. It's like you get a lot of fun things in the tournament. I like what we've seen so far. And look, even the next show, you're getting three debuts in the tournament with Evil, right. Lawler, and Okan. So it's a lot of good stuff, even at the midpoint. So I like what we've seen so far.
Yes, and I also want to give a shout-out to Tom Lawler and Royce Isaacs. They're a good tag team, and much like I said, I think I said it on this show too, you can pick out the eventual undercard match. Let's see what Kurakin has here. The first day... there really isn't a match that I would recommend. But for example, like the second match on the 27th is Kenta and El Fantasmo versus Tom Lawler and Royce Isaacs. That could be a really cool undercard tag match. Or the next one, too. Jeff Cobb and Great Okan versus Jonah and Batu Tito. I mean, they are not lighting the world on fire with these tag matches, but there can be good moments in these matches. So maybe check out those.
You let me know how they go, Strick.
I will watch one of those.
Yeah, like I said, I mean, to me...
that's the point. This tournament is really easy to watch, is easy to follow. I was at a wedding this past weekend, and I didn't watch these shows live, so I just sat down yesterday and watched all the tournament matches in one fell swoop. And that's just very convenient and easy to do. So you can follow along easily. You can pick and choose. You can do that too. So I guess this G1 has something for everybody right now.
Yeah, a good tournament so far. Can't wait to see where it goes forward.
Yes, so that's the G1 portion. As I said, I haven't watched anything from the weekend yet. Is there anything else, Dylan, that you wanted to talk about on this show? DDT had a show, Stardom had a show. What did you watch?
Yeah, I watched the main event of the DDT show. The last two matches, actually. I didn't really like the semi-main that much, but did you see the main event, or did you not? Did you pass
I've not seen anything else but New Japan yet.
Oh, okay. Well, do you know the result of the main event?
Yes.
What do you think?
You actually spoiled it to me. You DM'd me yesterday.
No, well, you were talking about the DT show. That, to me, that wasn't a big show. Like, I asked you, like, hey, what big show are you talking about? And you brought that up, but
it was a Kurakinol show. Come on.
But what do you think of that decision, then?
Yeah, I don't know. I really liked Asuka and Mao as a tag team champions team, and I wouldn't have had Higuchi and Yoshimura win the tag titles now because, one, it takes away from Higuchi not only being the champion, the singles champion and the tag team champion. I think that takes away from his special run that he is on now. And it also takes away from Yoshimura because he clearly is playing second fiddle to Higuchi right now in this tag team.
It feels like they have him slotted as a tag guy.
Yes.
General Yoshimura. His singles matches have been okay. Like, he hasn't exactly lit the world on fire when they've given him opportunities. So I like him a lot, but I can see why they might come to that conclusion, to be honest with you, just based on his singles matches that he's had so far. Higuchi, I think, is very interesting heading into a match with Indo, where that title's on the line, this kind of raises a red flag to me. Mm-hmm. To be honest with you, that could this be a sign of something? And I'm not saying it is. Maybe it's not. Maybe Higuchi will get a big win. But traditionally, one guy has been presented pretty much always as a main guy, and the other guy's never gotten over the hump until the main guy got injured, and now they're facing each other. So
that would make everything that they did when Higuchi won the title look so stupid that I just can't imagine that they will do it now.
You know, you have to hope so. Yeah. I mean, like I said, and DDT's, again, this is a really cold company, in my opinion. And it's like, the one moment of life they've had this whole year was that tournament where Higuchi won the title. So if they go back on that, I mean, it's not going to be a great thing for me personally, to be honest with you. And yeah. Like, even Asuka and Mao, that was like a good, fun team, you know, like you said. So it takes away from that on top of it. I don't know. I just thought it was interesting overall. But,
yeah, interesting decision, definitely. That definitely creates some doubt for the main event for Peter Pan. You're right there.
And maybe it's a good thing.
Yeah, sure.
It's a good thing to create doubt. You know, it'll make you more invested in the match as a Gucci fan if he does mm-hmm. win. Mm-hmm. And we can all look at this as like, hey, that was kind of a smart move. Like, if that does happen. But yeah, you know, a decent show. Like I said, it wasn't anything that I, you know, I kind of forgot it was on. I apologize for spoiling you. I thought you watched it.
It's okay. That's why you said it's that. As you said, it's not like a huge show. I just figured it's a Kirk and Hall show, and I should probably watch it.
Yes, and you know, I would not dissuade you from that. Stardom had two shows actually. The first one was the showcase type of show, and they had all kinds of weird stuff on here. It just seemed like it was some kind of experimental, like, type of show where you had, like, the Cosmic Angels match, you had an I Quit match, you had this Anywhere Falls match with a big inflatable slide.
Dylan, this is Stardom's take on WrestleLand.
I think you're right. Who is WrestleLando in this? Who is going to portray Showcase Lando here? Would that be Shuri as the champion? Because it was Tanahashi. The
I guess
first
so.
One.
Yeah, the ace should be.
Yeah, the ace. Yeah, exactly. It has to be Shuri. She needs to take up a new character for this. But they had the coffin match at the end with the Grim Reaper deal that they've done. All of these matches were varying levels of crazy. They had a Rumble match where Gokugan Death ended up winning, which paved the way for the return of Fukigen Death on the next show. The Cosmic Rules match, I thought was so funny, because a lot of people were very, like, against it.
Mm-hmm. And, I saw that on Twitter.
And early on, I could kind of understand it. When they advertised as, like, an 18+, mm-hmm. Another thing about this show, there was a DJ, in the arena, like, coming up, like, cutting stuff throughout all the match. We saw all kinds of songs. We saw, like, We Will Rock You, Earth, Wind, and Fire was on there. It was wild. Like, this was a crazy show, like I said. But, yeah, so they advertised as 18+, and I didn't really like that either. Like, obviously, that's, like, very weird how they did that and all of that. But the actual match, though, I was just laughing because people still talk about it like this is, like, the most lewd thing that's ever happened. And this whole time I was thinking... This match, they all three were wearing long sleeve t-shirts. This is more than you wear in all of your normal matches. How is this worse than anything else? That's the whole thing I was thinking the whole time there. But it was like a summer, like, goofball match. It wasn't anything like that I've seen or anything. But, you know, it was obviously, like, you know, it was aimed towards that style of a gravure idol type of deal, like that they both come from, Sayaka and Shirakawa. So that was just a dumb match, to be honest with you. It was so stupid that I really couldn't even be offended by it at the end, even though I was a little worried about it, how they were hyping it, to be honest. But you had the I Quit match with Karumi making her return after a long absence. Her versus Shuri. Shuri got the win of that, obviously. The Anywhere Falls match was so fun. Where you had the slide coming in. Koguma, unquestionably one of the MVPs of Stardom, with her amazing, the way they used the slides, like somebody would slide down while they had another girl in a leg lock, and they both slid down the slide. And Koguma tried to make a dive from the top of the slide, by then she just totally like botched it and face planted all the way down. And it was so funny. Like Iwatani on commentary was like laughing her ass off at this. It was a lot of fun. And Asumi got the win, most importantly. So then they had the coffin match in the main event. They had the Grim Reaper. Who would it be? They did an angle with Kamatani and Starlight Kid. And in the end, it was you.
It was me?
Not you, but you, okay. But you, the wrestler, like who, the one who once lost her wallet in Europe, which yes. He was. But a former Tokyo Joshi Pro wrestler, obviously, she came in, took off her mask, beat the crap out of both of them, and now they're in coffins. So I guess they're zombies now, Tulsi and Starlight. But then at the end, they threw an angle where there was another Grim Reaper that came up. So nobody knows who that is yet.
Okay.
And then they had so that to me felt like this really weird and crazy show where they're just throwing all kinds of nonsense against the wall. It was like another universe or something, you know. It's but I had fun with it mostly. To be honest with you, it was an amusing detour. It's not if the whole company did shows like this, I think I would have to check out. But you know, but for a one-time goofy show, like once or twice a year, they're going to do a second one in September. And who knows what will happen next going in there. But then the second show, you had the high-speed title match with Azumi and Rina. A fine match, not on the level of some of Azumi's other amazing matches, but a good one nonetheless. You had the three-way Captain Falls tag match. You had Prominence mm-hmm. Team getting a win with Risa Sera, Suzuki, and Hiragi Karumi. So all of them getting a nice little run here. Queen's Quest team, Hina, Lady C, and Amasaki. And then Cosmic Angels, Shirakawa, Sayaka. They teamed up with Hikari Shimizu. Oh, the first show, too, we have to mention that a ton of people were out with COVID or injuries or something. And that made everybody switch up the card.
Yeah, it's a big thing now. Like once again, in Japan, there's a lot of wrestlers that have caught it recently. The baseball league recently is it the word unscheduled? I don't think there is a word like that. Cancelled an entire entire set of games because like 57 players had COVID. So yeah, that's going on right now.
Yeah, that's been a big deal in Japan since they started opening stuff up again. So that's something, unfortunately, we have to continue to keep our eye on going forward. But, they had the artist match. You had Donna Del Mondo versus Oedo Tai. Another good match with the Oedo Tai team. The tag match was really good, I thought, with Hazuki and Koguma, FCC, taking on God's Eye, Ami Sarai and Mirai. Mirai haters in the mud. Let's get it right now with another big match. Koguma is, like I said, continues to be an MVP in both comedy or serious settings. Her team with Hazuki, I continue to absolutely love. And God's Eye team, a very good team. It wasn't like a great match or anything, but a very good one. And then you had the white belt match with Saki from Colors. She got her white belt shot versus Talsaya. Really good, fast-paced match. Only about 13 and a half minutes, according to Cage Match. Fun watch. Again, nothing that's going to electrify the match of the year ratings, but a good match. Rated 7 straight up, which I think is fair. Both and the tag title match was 7.05. Both of those were good. And then the main event, Shuri versus Tom Nakano, which might be my favorite Shuri match of the year so far. I thought it was an absolutely great match. Playing off being in Tom Nakano, being in Nagoya. Was in there. Obviously, that was a big deal. They really worked hard. Nakano had amazing fire. I think she's an incredible performer in general, and especially in terms of charisma. She would be definitely one of the top charismatic performers in the world, in my opinion. And Shuri, great wrestler. I've seen some people kind of down on her title reign, actually, to be honest with you, but I've liked it. Maybe I'm in the minority, but I think she's had a good run. All of her matches, even the Risa Sera match, the hardcore one, I thought was very unique and very cool. And then you have this match, which I thought was just a tremendous performance all around. And I think Nakano had one of her own best matches of the year, too. And like whatever weaknesses they may have, they canceled each other out going against each other, in my opinion. And I thought it was a really great match, honestly. One of the better ones of the year, I would say. So that was the big thing. The other two title matches, or the other three title matches were all worth watching. Nothing super special. You have to rush out, but they were all good. Like I said, the first show was just a crazy show. So at the end of the day, if you're more into that style, you might be cool with that. And they did something unique. I like the idea of the DJ. I think that's something other promotions should do, because they were actually able to air, like, "We Will Rock You."
Mm-hmm.
Is that illegal? Like, is that legal if you use a DJ? Does that make it easier to, like, get around copyrights?
Well, if you pay him, I guess.
It was a girl, the DJ.
Oh, if you pay her, I guess it's legal.
Yes, absolutely.
If you buy a DJ set, why wouldn't that be illegal?
Yeah, because you know, if you just play it over the speakers, they always say, "Oh, this song is muted due to copyright,"
mm-hmm, or what? Mm-hmm.
But the DJ, if you use the DJ, you could get around that, apparently. So that this is a secret I think we all need to use.
Yeah.
Going forward. You know, other companies, I would say, so they can play the great music for everybody. But, well, I mean, like Noah, they use Final Countdown without issue.
Yes, that's true. So I don't think they had a DJ there.
I think we need to check on that. Was the DJ there or was he missing? But no, but just again, good shows, both of them. Not like, you know, the show overall, it wasn't like anything that will threaten the show of the year, but the main event was great. All the title matches were watchable, and they did something different with the first show. I didn't love all of it by any means. I didn't love most of it, actually, to be honest, but I appreciated the effort of doing something different, at least. And, hey, they're a good company right now. They're heading right towards the 5-star Grand Prix, which is going to be – that's going to be what I care about the most. It's going to be all those matches.
It's going to be a huge tournament with 13 participants in each block, so –
A and B block too, no four blocks.
A lot of matches.
We're going to see somebody that might be able to reach 20 points or something in their
so
blocks.
Crazy.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's going to be a lot of fun overall.
Yes, sounds good. So thanks for the rundown from Stardom, Dylan. I guess we will be back on Thursday looking back at the next two G1 Climax shows. Looking forward to that. Except for that, I hope you, the listeners, enjoyed our review of the G1 Climax, both positive and negative. And yeah, I want to thank you all for listening. And goodbye.
Sayonara.
This is the MLW Radio Network.